नमो भगवते वसुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वसुदेवाय। So this section is called Humility, reading from Srila Prabhupada's letter book. First letter, Prabhupada says, I am very sorry that Subal Das has assumed such an air of importance. We should always remember that we are on the path of perfection, but we are not perfect. If Subal Das or anyone thinks he has attained perfection, he will be wrongly directed. I have asked you all to address your God brothers as Prabhu. This Prabhu means boss. If every one of us thinks of his fellow worker as boss, there's no question of misunderstanding. He says we call each other such and such Prabhu. Yanadas Prabhu, this Prabhu, that Prabhu, for women as well as men. And the idea is that when you call Prabhu to someone, you're saying, you're my master, you're my boss, you're my master, you're my master, you're my master. So Prabhupada is saying, so if everybody is taking a humble position and considering someone else as their boss, then Prabhupada says, where's the confusion? Because then everyone is trying to serve each other, everyone is trying to associate in a way to inspire the other or to be accountable in such a way and to be humble in the execution of services. This mistake is that being addressed as boss or Prabhu, one thinks himself as exactly Prabhu or the boss. So the delicate thing is that everyone is to see each other as Prabhu, but nobody is to think, well, I am Prabhu. Yes, right, I am Prabhu. So probably the mistake in this devotee is that he is thinking that, yes, that he is the boss. The difference in material and spiritual arrangements is that in a material arrangement, somebody is the boss in the sense of someone is in charge. In the spiritual sense, the person who is so-called in charge is a coordinator of services or in charge of setting an example for others, or should be in charge for trying to set an example of more sense of strictness, more humility, more devotion, more caring, etc. So, being in a leadership position should mean that one tries to take the lead in showing how to be the servant of the servant. Not the dictator, not the tyrant, but the servant of the servant. So, there's three ways the devotees are to relate. If someone is said to be inferior to you or junior to you, then one's duty is to relate to that person as servant, that you give some instructions or you give some guidance or you show some example, but the idea is that I'm the servant of that person. And if somebody is of the same so-called as you in terms of a peer, and there is a so-called equal, we say so-called because in all of these relationships the servitorship is always the same. It doesn't matter how the service is expressed. Someone is junior to you, or someone is immature, or someone is they're dependent or whatever, then you relate to them still as a servant, but the idea is that the service manifests in how you try to feel obliged and obligated as their servant to guide them, to assist them, to give a good example. If they're a peer, then your relationship is still a service, and you're serving each other by revealing minds and helping each other in that way, in a comrade friendship way. And if someone is superior to you, then the relationship is still service, all three ways. You're serving by trying to hear from them. You're serving by trying to assist in different ways, to offer some aid, assistance, and as you're guided, to offer some assistance. So, in any category, the pattern is always the same, that everyone is to see themselves as servant of the other. It's just a matter of how that service is manifested.
It says, like, for instance, the disciple sees himself as serving the community, serving the guru, to ultimately serve Krishna with a lack of any anarthas or any unwanted tendencies. But also the spiritual master sees himself as serving of the disciples. So he is serving them by trying to be paternalistic, trying to be motherly or fatherly and nurturing, and trying to encourage and trying to guide and trying to warn and trying to protect. And also sometimes he serves them by removing certain obstacles of confusion, but also he serves by creating confusion, in the sense that sometimes the spiritual master's duty is to speed up the disciple in their growth by giving them various tests that they have to work through for their growth, by giving them challenges, etc. It's like when in the Vedic times, when the disciple would live in the ashram of the guru's duty was to act as spiritual mentor and to give various types of tests so that disciples could grow and make rapid advancement and become free of gross sinful life, as well as unnecessary mental fixations and attachments and ego disturbances, etc. So sometimes the spiritual master is known as the one who takes away, but sometimes the spiritual master also is responsible for creating a situation to allow the individuals to be able to take necessary courses in their spiritual unfoldment. Especially if a disciple is trying to be very serious, then the spiritual master even kind of intervenes more in terms of creating more situations for that disciple to move faster. Like if you have a student who's doing good, has good potential in this in the class, then you notice that, and the student has the regular lesson, then the teacher can give them some additional assignments or give them some creative project to work on, or the teacher will call upon that one or demand more from that one, etc. Or will have a difficult problem, question, and then will ask that student in such a way. So that student can grow fast if they take advantage. Or if the student is not clear, the student even may think the student is being victimized because the teacher has many things, many questions. Then the most difficult question, the teacher always turns to this side or that side and asks one or two people who they know have more chance to be able to deal with such a difficult problem. Teaching is very personal if it's done with love. If it's not done with love, the teacher just comes in, has a lesson plan, throws it down, writes on the board, and year after year, month after month, everybody does the same thing, throws up the lesson plan, gets his salary, gets her salary, goes home, and that's it. But the serious teacher takes work home, tries to figure out how to make some improvements each year in the course, because it's a personal involvement and not just a matter of just a job. And the teacher is very sensitive. This child, you know, needs remedial training because their reading is very bad. The teacher has this one to get some special tutoring. This child seems to be a high achiever. Perhaps can be put in an advanced class. This child seems to be having some problem. Perhaps they're not eating proper, or there's some trouble at home. So the teacher knows that all of these things have bearing and tries to work that out. The spiritual master knows people come in with different energies from their previous lives. People have different conceptions of spiritual life. People have different experiences in this particular lifetime. They bring in different patterns from their family life, from their race, from the part of the world that they're in. They bring in different conceptions of the language they speak, bring in different conceptions based on the experiences they've had, whether they have been under cheating connections or not. Sometimes someone has been under so many situations that the person has been cheated or abused or misused, and so certain patterns in their consciousness. Sometimes the person has been in an environment where basically they've always been very dominant. Therefore, when they come in Krishna consciousness, it's a complete alteration of consciousness, because now, instead of being the controller and the dictator and being the center of attention, the devotee tries less and less to be the servant of others and tries to see how to be less and less involved in rewards and distinctions and adorations, etc. And by that, then the Lord gives the real rewards. It's almost the opposite. The spiritual life, like Lord Chaitanya makes a prayer, in his Shastika prayers, and he says how he does not want money, wealth, fame, etc., etc. But in the material life, these are all the things that one pursues. One tries to pursue money for money's work itself, fame for fame's worth. Devotee may pursue these things, but it's all in a mood of how can I make money so I don't have to worry about money? How can I make money so I can do this project or that project? How can I expand something in glorifying the Lord? Or the devotee is not interested in fame, but if fame comes, thinking, how can I make the Lord famous? How can I use any attention people may send to me or give to me so then I can channel that back to Guru and Krishna? How can I glorify the Lord in such ways? So those conceptions is based on the position of Prabhu, of each person seeing them, trying to see themselves as servants. But Prabhupada is chastising, he says, but Subal is thinking that he's perfect. And he's saying this is the process of cleansing. It's like a hospital. The people go to the hospital because they're sick. The difference between sick people outside and people in the hospital, that somebody goes to the hospital because they recognize that they need help. So when you go into a hospital, it's a place of sick people who at least have come to a conclusion that they need help. And they're working on some problems. And they're working on taking some medication, taking some care. Sometimes people think, well, devotees think like that, do like this. They have all different types of devotees, all different types of diseases, and all different types of intensities of the disease. But the beauty is that such persons have at least put themselves in the hospital for treatment. And if they do take their medicine properly, then the gaining good health, natural health, will come back very fast. But a hospital is also kind of dangerous too. Like in one sense, it's always precarious to go to a hospital because hospitals also have so many germs. Sometimes people get infected in hospitals. They have one disease. They go to the hospital. They wind up getting something else because there's so many germs around. So even when one is treating themselves, they have to be careful, have to become infected by some other type of thing. Sometimes people have sickness and they get pneumonia, get tuberculosis, get some germ infection, because the hospital is also an atmosphere where people are being processed constantly. So one must be careful while they're working on themselves. Also be careful about how they function in such an environment. They can pick up somebody else's bad habits, or they can get so distracted that they don't work on their taking their own medication. Or they can just be, of course, so self-centered that they go to the hospital and they're just trying to just do what they can do for themselves, and that's it. But the attitude or the constitution of the mindset affects also your healing. Two people can be in the room. One person is so morbid and dismal that their sickness takes longer for them to recover. Another person has a good vibrant consciousness. And even though they're sick, they take it in stride and they do the necessary things and they keep a good attitude. And before long, they're out of the hospital. The mistake is that being addressed as boss or Prabhu, one thinks himself exactly Prabhu or the boss. One should not forget himself as a humble servant, even though one is addressed as Prabhu. The spiritual masters offer respects as they are offered to the Supreme Lord. Unfortunately, the spiritual master thinks he has become the Supreme Lord, then he is doomed. It's like a spiritual master who really thinks, yes, I am Guru. I am the spiritual master. I am the final spiritual authority. Someone who thinks like that is doomed. Even though that is his duty to take the position of coordinating and overseeing, but in his own consciousness, he has to be thinking, I am the servant of all of those who come around me. I am obliged to serve them, to see that they get proper help. It is my duty, it is my obligation to be accountable. It is my obligation to feel their pain and to feel their happiness. It is my obligation to take some of their burden on my own head to make it freer for them. But all the others are calling him spiritual master. In his own consciousness, he is not to be thinking, yes, I am the spiritual master. I am the Lord of what is to be surveyed in my domain. A bona fide spiritual master always thinks of himself as servant of the Lord. One should never forget to be humble in dealings. If every one of us would conduct our business in that spirit of prabhu and servant, then there is very little chance of being misunderstood. Sometimes misunderstanding may take place, but it should be adjusted in the spirit of service attitude to the prabhus. In other words, the prophet said, sometimes misunderstandings will, regardless of whatever you do, sometimes misunderstandings will still take place. But then, if one then reflects back to being prabhu, and others are also thinking that way, then Prabhupada says, then the adjustment must be made quickly back to the right service attitude. I know that my presence is very urgently required, Prabhupada says. I became very much proud of nonsense rascal disciples like you. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu represented himself as a nonsense rascal to understand Vedanta philosophy. Actually, at the present day, the people in general cannot understand Vedanta philosophy. The other day I met here Swami Prabhavananda, and I talked with him. To speak plainly how I found him to be a great rascal. I know that this station is one of the Ramakrishna missions, beginning from Vivekananda down to this age. All are living more or less in fool's paradise. Prabhavananda said that Ramakrishna in his previous life was Lord Chaitanya. Similarly, it is said that he was formerly Rama and formerly Krishna. Basically, he was Rama and Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. Why there are so many contradictions between Rama, Krishna, and Lord Chaitanya on one side and Ramahamsa or Ramakrishna, Paramahamsa on the other side? Do you think that Ramakrishna was Lord Chaitanya? Just after 400 years, he changed the whole philosophy. Lord Chaitanya propagated worship of Krishna. Krishna propagated that one should worship him. How is this that Ramakrishna worships the material goddess Kali? Ask the question. So rascalism is going on all over the world, so we have to be very careful in understanding Krishna consciousness. And therefore, if we remain continuously rascals and try to understand Krishna consciousness, understand Krishna as he's spoken in the Bhagavad Gita or another Vedic text through the right sources of disciplic succession, That is our real knowledge. The idea is everyone should try to place himself as if he doesn't know anything. Understand? The idea is everyone should place himself as if he doesn't know anything. Then his position is secure. But as soon as he said that I know everything and I was previously such and such, exactly he is a rascal. In other words, Prabhupada is emphasizing that devotees should always be humble and not foolish, not naive, but humble in the sense of truthful, but not disturbed by happiness or distress. Humility doesn't mean you close your mouth. Humility doesn't mean that you see something and don't speak about it. But it means you offer. It may be accepted or it may be rejected. It doesn't matter to you. You've offered it. That's the service to God. That's been accepted by the Lord and by the spiritual master. So you offer, and it may be accepted, it may be rejected, it may be ignored, it may be appreciated, and it's okay. One simply offers their best. So I know that you are trying to know things from the real source, and you're not puffed up like other fools who think that they know everything. Your humbleness is very much appreciated by me. Sometimes people just say, well, how does the guru call people fools and rascals and whatnot? But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Avajante Mahamuha. Manusyam tanu masata param vama ajanato mama bhuta maheshwara. He says, those who think that I come into this world and I have a material body, etc., they don't understand my transcendental nature. He calls these people fools. He uses the word sigmudha. People think that God has a material body or that the Lord's pastimes are material or mundane. He says that people are rascals. They do not know his param vama ajanato, his supreme dominion, and his manifestedness, and his arrangements of how he is manifesting but still maintaining spiritual essence, how from his spiritual essence all things are emanating, but at the same time he still remains complete and perfect. But our normal conception is form means material form, interactions mean the two interactions. And if you give something or do something, then you have less. Your attitude of humbleness is praiseworthy. A devotee should always remain humble and meek, especially to the authorities and devotees. Lord Caitanya's philosophy is not to become God, but to become servant of God. The more one becomes the Lord, great servant of the Lord, the more he is devoted near to the Lord. This is our philosophy. In other words, the Prabhupada says, and it says in the Purana, the one who says he is God's servant is not God's servant. One who says he's a servant of the servant, then that is the actual true servant of the Lord. Someone thinks, I know God, I am serving God directly. Or says, this is an improper mindset. One is to think, I am the servant of the servant. The more one becomes the low grade, otherwise it is to people who say, they serve God, but then like in the Bible says, if you love me, then feed my sheep. The service is manifested by being the servant of others, or being the servant of the environment. And that naturally allows you to be able to be more the servant of God. Because you're seeing God in everything and everywhere. Therefore, you're more God or Krishna conscious because of the tentativeness of being alert and service at all times. The more one becomes the lower grade servant, not the higher grade, lower grade servant, or the more the servant of the servant of the servant, the more he is devoted nearer to the Lord. This is our philosophy. I have all my hearty blessings upon you. Please do your duties nicely, and Krishna will be pleased to shower his blessings upon you. He is very kind to sincere souls, and he gives intelligence from within to sincere devotees. We require only to become sincere in the service of the Lord, and everything is there, ready for our consciousness. So all we require is to become more sincere, and everything is already arranged for us, even ahead of time, by Krishna. You don't have to become distracted or inattentive or doubtful or fearful or demoralized. We only have to become more and more conscious and more serious. And the same Lord who's helped us light them at the lifetime, same Lord who's brought us from one experience to the next, same Lord has helped us to grow from this arrangement to that arrangement, the same Lord is still there, ready to take us faster, but it's all now more on us. I thank you very much for your sincere appreciation and for your feelings of imperfection. The more you think as perfect, now how is it that we can hear all of these things in the scripture, and we also hear them as we speak them, and at the same time it doesn't work for us, or at the same time it seems theoretical? You answer that question yourself. This hankering after perfection is seen in even the most perfect devotees. So we should never think of being perfect at any stage. Because the writings and the these personalities or Prabhupada, they're not bluffing. This hankering after perfection is seen in even the most perfect devotees. So we should never think of being perfect at any stage. Actually, Krishna consciousness is unlimited, because Krishna is unlimited. So we do not know at which point perfection is there. This says there's an interesting reciprocal relationship. The more you renounce, the more Krishna actually gives you. Sounds strange, doesn't it? Seems like the opposite to be the case. Seems like the more you give up something or turn something over to God, like the more you would have left, because now it's not under your control. But actually, the more you renounce, the more you get, and the happier that you are. Try it, you'll see. It's unusual. The more you actually, renunciation is not just renouncing something physical. That may be part of it. But it's renouncing the attachments, ownership, and the more that the Krishna gives you. Sometimes you have to look at your lives and just make a test like that. Just see. The more you turn over to God, the more you'll see that instead of having less, you'll have more. To the point that you just begin to be in a constant meditation of how the Lord is just giving you so much that you're not even worthy of. As you
put more things in God's hands. Because ultimately, the Lord is the one who's given and taken away anyway. So the more that we renounce. Our problem is that we renounce the physical. We don't renounce the psychological. We don't renounce the subtle. And so, and all disease is still underlying it. We don't do that because really, if in the material body, the material world, basically, people are cheaters. And so, we are not like so honest with ourselves. And the way we can see how dishonest we are with ourselves, just follow the mind for 1 week, or follow the mind even for 1 day. And just take notice of the things that go through the mind. And you see how there's such a game that a person plays with themselves. I'm okay. I'm all right. No, I'm not all right. I'm happy. I'm not happy. I'm disturbed. I don't like that. Why did you say that? Why did you say this? I mean, why does God need me to do this? What does he really mean by saying that? I heard the lecture. What's the ulterior motive? What is it? You just look at the mind. Just go through. You can go through a few hours. You don't even have to go through a whole day. You see how there's so many different persons, even within one person's body, different energies. I mean, different reflections are there. They're sometimes diametrically opposed. So that means all of these things, the mind is grabbing at just trying to claim proprietorship. But as you renounce so much of the stuff, you actually feel totally different. I was writing one of my godbrothers. I haven't had contact with him in about maybe 10 years. We used to work together when I was in Eastern Europe. So he's back in America now. He was in charge of, or one of the two devotees in charge of Russia, and past Russia and a few other countries in the preaching work. Now he's in America. And he wrote me and saying that he's back in America now. And he's eager, he's in the community in Florida. He was writing, he's one of the leaders there, and he's asking if I could come and do some programs there. So maybe the old godbrothers we haven't seen in a long time. He says they're asking about you. He says, by the way, how are you doing? What are you doing? So I wrote him one line in the letter, and I thought about it. And I says, every year is better than the previous year, and every day is better than the previous day. And I said, so. But that sounds like fantasy. But it's true. That as you in consciousness give more to the Lord, then even if externally things are not seemingly growing or developing or whatnot, each day becomes like an excitement of service to Krishna, an excitement of realizing how merciful that Krishna is. And you're happy. You're happy about life. So renunciation brings happiness. It even brings opulences. It doesn't always come when you think, but to the degree that you renounce, you also become opulent. It's like the majority of you, even at your state of renunciation now, if you had a very good astrologer to do a chart on you, most of you will see that you will be wealthy sometime in this lifetime, in some kind of way, because by renunciation, it brings opulence. It brings assets, different types of assets. Now, how you use it or what you do with it, that's different. But in most cases, most of you, you look at your futures, you'll find that there's some connection of wealth that comes your way based on renunciation. So the more that you renounce, the more facilities or the more the environment feeds you with something to be able to give back to Krishna or to serve Krishna. So we are able not to have all of these different things that we have to feed ourselves with or attach ourselves, and then we feel happier about life. And then the various things we move through or various things are changed in our environment because of Krishna's satisfaction. Otherwise, for many people, they need a certain kind of difficulty in their life in order to become unattached to certain things. So when we chant Hare Krishna, we say, Krishna, help me. But then Krishna decides how he's going to help you. You may think help should come in terms of
you being given this and this being taken away, but they're necessary. You may feel that health means that you must be free of sickness. You may be chanting Krishna, and Krishna help me, and Krishna may see that the best way to help you is to give you sickness. Then you get sickness. Or you may be chanting, Krishna, help me so my mind can be peaceful. I'm doing too much management. I'm too much having to do too much business. And Krishna's help may be to give you more business, to give you more management, to give you more money to have to worry about. Or Krishna's help may be, then I'll to take it away. So it doesn't come in the way that we always think. And therefore we get completely bewildered because we're thinking that it has to come in a certain way. And we have decided what is best of how we need to know God and how we need to be helped by God. But the Lord may be constantly giving us what is best, but somehow we're not growing with it to understand or to use it for what Krishna has given it for. It's not that spiritual life means that you're supposed to be peaceful. It means that you will be beyond peacefulness once you are able to, as we keep saying, pass the test that Krishna has given to you. Then you definitely become peaceful. But the peacefulness has nothing to do with what is happening around you, or what is happening to you. It's a matter that you become peaceful and that internally you become aware of why Krishna is arranging something and you are growing with it, or you're able to use it. And if you don't grow with it, then it will remain a constant thorn. It'll never change. Just like we were reading the other day, how when Kiran was here, we had two or three wonderful classes on household life, relationship. Unfortunately, some of you weren't there. And so we're reading Bhagavatam, and we're discussing, he was giving class. He was mentioning how sometimes the spiritual master requests directly for somebody to marry, or somebody to go to school, or somebody to finish their education. Someone is on their master's, and the spiritual master says, no, finish your doctorate. In another case, spiritual master says, okay, you have your master's now. So, now go ahead and do this service, do this, do that. And in one case, one is being told, so, you should marry. And then in some rare case, spiritual master may inquire and ask someone, well, it doesn't make it necessary, for you to marry. So, I was asking him, so, how do we understand, could there seem the contradiction and the differences, the variety there? The spiritual life is supposed to be absolute. So he answered it that, one man's medicine is another man's poison. And that's exactly. So, in one case, one's medicine may be to make that person wealthy. Another person's medicine may be to take certain things away. One man's medicine may be to let them have the most wonderful, peaceful kind of atmosphere in their workplace or in their house. Another man's medicine may be to bring just chaos and headaches all the time. For one to become unattached, for one to become aware that so many things we have are just things to move through to be able to ultimately to know Krishna or become stagnated by. So that's where Krishna comes in, and how much we really are thinking Krishna is ultimately controlling, and that Krishna has allowed something to happen not by accident, but something is there. And so one can be, so I can write a letter to my God brother and say that every day is a day of more excitement, or each year is a year of more excitement, not because conflicts are not there, not because difficulties are not there, not because problems are not there, but because of whether there's a good situation or a bad situation, that we accept it all. Thank you, Krishna, in that spirit. And then the same kind of muck that gets a person so bogged down, it makes them very depressed about life itself. And you get too depressed about life, you just start thinking suicidal, or you think that, or you feel you have to change the physical environment, and then you will want to not be in the institute, or you want to run from devotees, or you want to run away from hearing the scriptures, but you carry the same mind with you. Just as we were saying the other day, that a strange thing about not going back to Godhead once you start a spiritual process, that if you don't go back in the next life, you have to still be confronted with some of the same things that you failed on before. You know, when you're in a grade, you have to pass that test before you go to the next grade. So even if you didn't go back, in the next life, one of your major experiences, you're going to have to deal with some of the same kind of things that caused you in the last life not to, to reach Krishna. But then how much more important it is to try to finish up all that stuff now. If you want to, you got to take the same test again, and you waste the time, and you may even fail it again. So that is the difference between the idea of, for instance, of claiming the proprietorship and the idea of being the son of the servant, or being the Prabhu, or not being distracted, and why you find that constantly throughout the scriptures. Not because it's impossible, because it's the only way to actually to be freed of some of the failure. The more one feels imperfect in Krishna's service, the more he is advancing in Krishna consciousness. Even the topmost devotee feels they are inadequate in their service to the Lord. So it is good to feel inadequate and to try harder to please Krishna with better services. So knowledge, growth, and spiritual potency causes you to feel more humble in a genuine sense. Why? Because the more genuine knowledge you have, the more you realize how much there is to know. And the more you want to know and you want to grow, you know, with it, the more you become humbled by it, because the more powerful knowledge you have, the more you realize the danger and in misusing it. So it makes you more humble. It's like a expert martial artsman is very afraid about using his strength, because he realizes that in his hands he can take a life. He very easily can take a life. So then one becomes humble to that power and is even more careful about using it. Even the topmost devotees feel they are inadequate in their services to the Lord. One should never feel, oh, I have seen Krishna, and so I have reached perfection. This is not Krishna consciousness. Your humbleness is very much appreciated by me. This humbleness is the sign of progress in Krishna consciousness. You understand that? Humility is a sign of progress. A Krishna conscious person thinks always about himself as the lowest creature in the world. And the more one thinks like that, he becomes elevated more and more. A Krishna conscious person is never falsely puffed up. He is satisfied with his humble position as a servant of Krishna. Hope you are as well. Yes, to call one another Prabhu is all right, but not to become Prabhu. To accept others as Prabhu, remain a servant is the idea. But because somebody is calling you Prabhu, one should not become a Prabhu and treat others as servants. In other words, everyone should feel himself as a servant and not to think himself Prabhu because he is being called that. I am much pleased to receive your letter of June 11, 1968. And full of humility and love and very nice sentiments. Your simplicity is a great asset for Krishna consciousness. Krishna is very kind to the meek and simple. So dullness of the mature world and consciousness about Krishna. So dullness of the material world and consciousness about Krishna go together. Too much intelligence and mature activities are distracted from Krishna consciousness. Now why is that? The other day we were reading, Prabhupada was emphasizing for devotees to get degrees. In some cases, he told devotees it wasn't necessary. Other cases, he told devotees it's very good for you to finish your graduate studies. Here he's saying, but material intelligence can be a distraction. Well, that's obvious. But sometimes we get so caught up in this data processing and data collecting and information gathering that we lose our conception of what is actually knowledge. Or what is wisdom, become so overloaded in such a way. Or sometimes very intelligent people find even more ways to rationalize, like some deviation. Have more difficulty in being able to be honest with themselves because they put up all of these intellectual blocks. Better to remain dull and simple as you are. Thus make advancement in Krishna consciousness. There's a very nice story about Bharat Maharaj. Remain just like a dullard in order to avoid material association. He was known as Jat Bharat. When he was tested, Maharaj Rahugana found him highly advanced in Krishna consciousness and became his disciple.
Yet we should always think of ourselves as the most fallen, most ignorant, and it's simply, and it is simply by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya we have even the opportunity to serve Krishna. We have no qualifications of our own. It is simply by the merciful glance at this most magnificent appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that we have been given the chance to serve Radha and Krishna. You asked about the desire for fame. Fame is a mature desire, but the desire of fame in Krishna consciousness is not bad. If you think that people may know me as a great devotee of Krishna, that they may acknowledge me as a nice devotee of the Lord. That is not at all bad. But even one is highly elevated in Krishna consciousness, he should not think himself a great devotee. He should not think himself, he should always think himself as humble. So we can aspire for greatness as a way to try to draw more attention, you know, to God, as a way to try to get more facility to help others and to serve the Lord. But then when we start thinking that we are great, we start thinking that we are Prabhu, even though we all call each other Prabhu, Prabhu, Prabhu. And as soon as somebody starts thinking that, yes, I am the Prabhu, I am the great Prabhu, then the Prabhupada says it is all doomed. Any questions or any comments? Prabhu means master or boss, Prabhupada says. We're looking at each other thinking, you're my boss, you're my boss. He says how humility is concomitant, or it is a part of the growth experience. As we grow more and more genuinely, we naturally become also more humble. But humility is not being foolish or naive or blind. It is a matter of being truthful and always being firm in that you're not distracted by people praising you or blaming you. You're not distracted by people. When you're humble and people praise you, it's no big deal because you don't consider yourself as worthy of it. And when you're humble, people blame you and you don't see it as a big deal because you feel, I'm worse than that. So, it's humility, but that's also strength. Because then you don't get caught up in other people's stuff. Even sometimes it's said that one who flatters you is your worst enemy. Because then that person makes you feel you're okay. When you start feeling you're okay, then what's the need to try to become more of a higher achiever if you're already okay? So once that's a person who criticizes you is your best friend. Because they help to remind you about the work that you have to do, that you want to do anyway. They may have their attitude about how they present it to you, but they're your best friend because they remind you about homework that you have to be about. Any question or comments?
Your Grace, if we are striving for perfection, that's an unreached goal then. And
not really, let me stop there. Perfection in the sense that we want to be puppets, you know, for the Lord. So we always strive in that effort. And when there's too much attentiveness to, it's human to error. With error and error and error and justify it. But we understand by our own strength how can we overcome temptations. But at the same time we know that there's no sin that is ultimately over righteousness. But there's nothing impossible for God to give us the strength to be able to move through. So in that regard, we try to be a perfect servant. Serving the divinity. We try to perfectly humble ourselves so that divinity becomes more active in our consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Then, should we have a scale or something we can analyze ourselves to see if we have made any advancement or
definitely. We must do that regularly. Just read the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita and see what things Krishna says constitute one who's becoming dear to him. And then see to what degree you fall short. Constantly evaluate yourself. There's a whole list in the 12th chapter. And some of the things is one does not see himself as a fighter. One is not envious. One is unaffected by happiness or distress, friend or enemy. It's all of these kind of things. This is the kind of things we talk about every day. That's why we do it. Go ahead. Anyone else? I'm doing something right, a certain kind of results. If I'm doing something wrong, there's other kind of results. I may be doing something wrong, somebody else may be also doing something wrong, someone else also doing something wrong. We all have bad results. But if we're doing something right, then there are certain things that become distinct in our consciousness and in our life. If we're doing something wrong, there's certain things that become distinct in our consciousness and in our environment. It's not a religion we're dealing with. We're dealing with the science of self-realization. Religion is all right. It's very basic. It's a science. Spiritual science. These are the underlying tenets of all religions. There's a difference. Religion, you just go someplace, you do some ceremony, and you feel good about it, and the atmosphere is pleasant, you feel a push, a motivation, and then you kind of go, and you do your other stuff for the rest of the week, and you come back and get charged up again. There's a science to work on every day, whether you're in a congregation or you're not. The congregation is more or less just to give you more of the strength to know what to do on your, for yourself on your own when you're in different environments. And to see if it's working and to practice it so that you see what your results are. So it's like a war in that sense. You come to get your ammunition, you go out and do the battle. If you get your ammunition, you keep going out doing the battle, you keep getting the wounds and the same wounds, then it means you're doing the same stuff. Or other people are doing the same stuff in your environment. They're doing the same stuff and you're doing the same stuff. They're affecting you, you're affecting them. They're the same thing. So if there's no growth for that, then you're just going to drive each other crazy. And then something has to break. You've got to leave that environment, change that situation. But change that situation. Sometimes we have to change the situation to be able to deal with a problem that we have to deal with, but we can't deal with it in that situation. It's also there. It's okay if we have to do that. Sometimes you may be able to, you have a paper you have to write. You got to write the paper, but you can't write it in your room upstairs or downstairs, even though you're the only one there, because you just keep falling asleep. What you do is you go to the library, and you go in the room there, and then you write. You do what you have to do. The same writing, same work you have to do. Something about that environment just gives you too much of a disturbance because of what you do in that environment. So instead of doing it in your bedroom or stairs in your house, or in a basement, you go to the library, or you go to the park, and you write the same stuff you have to do. Sometimes the environment that we're in, we're just not able to move outside of that. It just puts too much weight on us. Then we have to make some change. Any other questions? No? Like I find even sometimes studying, I find if I'm studying some kind of thing, I study better on the floor. If I'm reading something, I feel better on the couch. If I'm doing something else, I want to read in the rocking chair. If something else I'm doing, I want to go by water. I want to be reading or writing or doing some meditation by water. One of the things I do, I want to be walking. Just walking. So I think about it. Even though it's the same thing or whatnot, it has to be done in one sense. But sometimes a different environment gives a different energy, you know.
Mm-hmm. So when we're finding ourselves stagnated and being distracted, and we know the reasons why, but we're like caught in a pattern and we're not able to get ourselves out of it, is the answer to just increase our sadhana and cry out more to Krishna to help us to just change if we find that we're just stuck?
Yeah, but see, sometimes we can be doing that, but every time the relief comes, we don't use it. So then what happens is that the intensity must always be there, crying out. But we also have to be more careful to look at when we do cry, what happens. See, when we cry like that, something is happening. Because God is not just ignoring us. Something is happening. And we have to look closer at what happens when we cry out. Because something is happening, and that's what we have to deal with. What happens after we cry out? We have to be able to address that. We're having some problem, and we're crying out. And as we cry, we have to look, especially around that time that we're crying. You know, within those few days that we're crying, I take a closer look at what things is happening to us. What's coming to us? What's coming away from us? Something is coming now, once you're crying out, that is part of the medicine that can make a change. But although we're crying out, and something is happening, for some reason, we're not actually taking that medicine. And because of that, we keep crying out, but the problem is still going on. Other question?
Shilpesh Pad, you spoke a little bit about the dishonesty that basically the conditioned souls have as we enter into these different realms here in material universes. So I was wondering in terms of uncovering some of these different layers that we have, in order to move away from the mode of goodness or from the New Age concept of when we see things, you know, within ourselves or within another person, not be judgmental, not be critical, all of these different things that the New Age people offer, we see that somewhat a little different than Krishna consciousness, because Krishna consciousness offers a real foundational philosophy to deal with things. So my question is, when we start realizing that we have these layers, how can one apply the philosophy to actually become free from those layers?
It's impossible if there's not a strong amount of humility. One will not penetrate to deeper levels of consciousness. The person will always be on the surface, and the devotional life will not seem to go very far. And when there's different things happening in their life, they'll resort more back to simple things, and then they'll become okay again, then they'll go back to simple things, and they'll become okay. Without humility, the higher levels of consciousness can never be accessed. Because see, we are actually responsible for our own stagnation. Nobody stagnates you. It's how one codifies and accepts how they deal with whatever's in the environment. So we're responsible for our own. Every problem we have, ultimately, we are responsible for it. Somehow we've drawn it to us. Somehow we have aligned ourselves with it. Somehow something we've done, the resultants have brought this kind of problem. So now, if we're the ones really ultimately responsible, if we don't have that humility within ourselves, then nothing's really going to change that much. Because the humility and the cry is a person removing something that's causing them to not to be able to grow, or causing them to become too disturbed by this, become affected by this or affected by that. See, it's not our environment. It's never really our environment. Because our environment is drawn by us. But it's really the person. It's each individual of what he has created, or what she has created for themselves. So in that sense, we're actually co-creators with God, and then we're constantly creating something and then having to be responsible for it. It's like the child is playing with some things, and they drop the lamp, and they drop this, and it all falls on them, or it breaks, and they're all entangled and whatnot. Well, they've actually created that situation by some inattentiveness, some playing around, you know, some dabbling, some this, some that they have created. Now it's a big mess. It's not so easy to get out of it, but they've actually created it. So that's why the sense of humility is there. On the Bible, it says how the pure in heart shall inherit the kingdom of God. Or, if pure in heart shall see God, and the meek shall inherit. Well, it's not that the Lord is asking people to be foolish, or to be docile, or not to be aggressive. It's just that everything about our lives is part of our own creation. Our co-creation. So in the idea of humility, it allows us then to start creating different things. But without being honest, and honesty is a part of humility. Because see, the honesty is that it's hard for someone to really to recognize their own weaknesses in a genuine sense. So by being humble, in such a way, then since we are responsible for whatever we've created, if I have 10 enemies, I'm responsible. If I have 1,000 friends, I'm responsible. I'm responsible about what I've drawn to me. I'm responsible about when something comes to me, how I codify it. I'm responsible. If I'm poor, I'm responsible for it. I'm educated, I'm responsible. I'm uneducated, I'm responsible. Because God has given me the free will and is adjusting things according to my mindset and my karmic patterns. So, if I have 100 people who think that I'm a rascal, I'm responsible for that. Whether I'm a rascal or not, I'm responsible for what I sent out, or what I did, or what I didn't do. If I have a child who's a nonsense, I have a husband who gives me pain, I have a wife who gives me pain, I'm responsible. I've drawn it. Something about me has drawn this in my universe. And now, if I don't like it, if I'm not happy about it, I'm responsible to make the change. If I haven't changed, I haven't changed it, or I haven't changed the way I relate to it, then I'm responsible for that also. It's never that our environments cannot change or our conscience cannot change. But if things are not changing, then I'm responsible for them. Then I have to look and see. I'm crying out, but now when the thing comes to help me to change it, why am I not using it? So I'm crying out. The Lord is not saying, okay, I'm not going to listen to that person. No. The Lord is listening to everybody. So, and the Lord wants us to be happy and to be moving fast. So, if I'm moving slow, or I feel like I'm not going anywhere, or I feel like people don't understand me and people don't care about me, or I feel that the environment is not satisfying, I'm responsible. We don't like that because we want to feel, because this is where cheatingness comes in. We want to blame everybody, everything, except ourselves. We want to blame the environment. We want to blame the teacher. We want to blame other students. We want to blame everything. Everything but ourselves. But the only blame is one place. It's ourselves. Because something about us draws some other things. And we have to see, why I keep drawing this? Why am I drawing this? Why is that I have the same kind of test that I have to deal with day after day, or sometimes year after year? Some people, they look at their lives, they'll see the disappointments always come in a similar fashion. Same kind of disappointments. Just. When people have different experiences, we'll find out they have the same kind of problem that appears, just in a little bit of the different, you know, different variety. Same kind of stress that they experience each day. Why is that? They haven't changed themselves to draw something different. And there's no way to help anybody with that unless they're able to have a more sense of humility, of realizing that they have more control of their life than they think. You can't give somebody control of their life if they don't think they have control. But you can't create. Because even though you give them wealth, money, fame, this, that, they feel they have no control of it. It still doesn't mean anything to them. That you can't create. You can help them to realize, you can do this, you can do that. It's like somebody has a really, really, really heavy phobia. They're afraid if they come down the steps, they're going to fall and they're going to die. You can talk to them all you want, but if they're too afraid, they won't leave the upstairs room. They've already convinced themselves. If they come down, they're going to fall and they're going to tumble down the steps. So you can show them pictures of people walking down the steps. You can show them how you walked down and came up. You can explain to them, go step by step, you'll be okay. It won't be easy. After a while, it sounds like you're just too much heavying them out because you keep bringing up the pictures. You keep reminding them about this. But they've already accepted that they can't walk down the steps. So there's no way to penetrate them until they finally realize that they have created this situation, or they have drawn this by themselves, by their own energies, desires, likes and dislikes. They've drawn it. They just don't like the form it came in. Until one really, really accepts that, the one really accepts that they are responsible for every problem they have, life won't be different. This is why Prabhupada is emphasizing being a servant of servant, being humble. That's what real humility means. Now what happens is that when one feels that way, then now whatever is blocking is moved out to the side. And the Lord makes the adjustments. Because Maya is really insurmountable in one sense. But the Lord gives the strength or makes the adjustments. But as long as we keep thinking, he's the cause of my problem, she put me in anxiety, he put me in anxiety, I'm okay, I'm doing the right thing, but that one doesn't do the right thing. If you're doing the right thing and somebody else is doing something improper, but that person is destroying you, and you're not doing the right thing either. You understand that? If you're doing the right thing, and somebody's doing something wrong, but they're destroying you, then you're not doing the right thing either. Because righteousness cannot be destroyed. Righteousness is stronger than incoherence or evil or whatnot. If you're actually doing the right thing, somebody's doing the wrong thing, they cannot destroy you. To make you more glorious, actually. But it's always mixed. But it can be changed by the individual saying, I had enough. I suffered enough. In previous life, enough in this lifetime. I didn't come to spiritual life also to suffer. So let me see. What am I doing that's causing me to suffer? Because I'm not supposed to be suffering. Only suffering I'm supposed to be having is that I cannot serve the Lord more. The only suffering one should have is that I'm suffering because I want to serve the Lord more. And that gives me anxiety. That's the only major anxiety a person should have. Any other anxiety means that we have to create differently so we won't have it. And we have the power to make a change. If you feel you don't have the power, you never will have it. You feel it's out of control, you never will. You feel everybody else is responsible, then everybody else is always going to be responsible. While you're suffering about dealing with the reactions of what you've created that you think is somebody else's stuff. Now someone else is also creating what happens to them. But you're creating what happens to you. And if it's like not changing, or if it's not working, then if you're not honest, it's never going to change. And the more you see that yourself has created this, then when you start crying out, then you notice what Krishna brings to you, and you'll be able to move through it. Because you're crying out, Krishna is bringing something to make a change. But if we keep focusing the same way, when it's coming here, we don't see it, because for us it's not coming, because we're not tuning to it. But then what happens after a while? You'll never have to go back to sinful life. Because there has to be pleasure. You can't go on and on and on trying to serve God and not experiencing pleasure and some exhilaration and do that for the rest of your life. Because there will be a void. And with that void, you'll have to fill it up. So you'll start trying to fill it up again with artificial stimulation, with flickering pleasures, with the idea that you occupy yourself with those to the point that you won't have to think about it, that they're flickering. You just go back more to simple things, just do a kind of a variety of simple things. And then when your mind gets too bothered about what you're doing, you just do some other simple things. Keep yourself active so you don't have to think about so much about what you're doing. You move yourself from environments where you have to be reminded. Move yourself from environments where the pressure is. So you leave the association of Vaishnavas or spiritualists so you don't have to think about what is proper and what isn't proper. You move yourself in an environment where people, you're taking up a, you know, like a new life, where people not thinking you are spiritual, so they don't hold you accountable for that. Then you find other relationships. Especially you find another mate. You find somebody who's not interested in spiritual things, so therefore No one is monitoring each other about anything spiritual. And then you become a failure, materially and spiritually, in most cases. Sometimes you may have some good karma from the past that may make you materially successful in that environment. Usually you become a failure, materially and spiritually. Any other questions?
I just have a comment. And you were just talking about everything I was going to share about. Because I'm seeing how it's touching on Chintamani's question also about, you know, when the problems come, you know, calling out. Well, I'm starting to realize that, especially in household relationship, household of life, the person is so close to you, they're just a constant mirror to you. And every time that, you know, I'm experiencing some anxiety or some resistance or, you know, anything like that, some disturbance, a lot of times I will, you know, like you're saying, you know, put the blame on or see others as the cause of my anxiety. But the humility is the key thing, because if I just listen, you know, for example, if Chintamani is sharing something to me about myself that is true, you know, that I may not like, and I have resistance to it, well, that's the medicine, you know. And then I may come here and you're saying the same thing and I can hear it from you. that humility is a real thing that I need to work on.
And then see the beauty that if you're trying to love somebody, they're trying to love you. And if they say something bothers them, all right, then see how to work on it. Even if you feel that it's not really your issue, but the person you love feels that it's an issue, it is an issue. And then ask him, and then ask them, how can I change? What can I do? They're not going to say, well, kill yourself. I mean, they're not going to say something that's like impossible for you, you know, for you to do. If they care about you somehow, they're not going to say, well, what you really should do is just go cut off your neck so I can look at your face. You know, what you really should do is you should take sleeping pills, you know, overdose. They're not going to say that. So they're going to say, well, then you ask him. So, how can I make you happy? What? How do you feel this thing should be dealt with? Or what do you feel, you know, we should both do in that situation? Or what do you feel would be the, you know, the more spiritual thing? They're saying that, no, I didn't like this. Or this wasn't done. This was done wrong. Or this is not. And especially if they're spiritualists, they both want to do the thing that's spiritually proper. So it's different visions. So someone may say, you know, you really made a fool of yourself. I mean, you really shouldn't be like that. So you can get to a big, big thing, but I wasn't foolish, you're just envious. Or what about you last week? You did worse. Or you can say, well, and you know, it's not impossible to do this. Just try it. So you can say, well, what would make you happy about this? What do you think was the better thing that would be the best for everybody? What do you think would be the best thing for the family? All right? And you get a good opinion. Oh, you feel that this is not the best thing for the family, that it could be done in a different way. Okay, so let's talk about it. What do you feel would be the best thing? All right, let's try that. If it doesn't work, okay. Then you're there both to try something else. Then he'll ask, okay, so what do you think would be the best thing for the family? It's all right. If things are not so easy, not so difficult if we have that sense of humility. And if we are ready to grow and use whatever is possible. And when you really love somebody, see, sometimes we're thinking, I love that person, but the person doesn't love me. What you're really saying is, I love about what I want to do and how I want that person to be, and I love. But the person doesn't really love me, because they don't think the way that I think. And they don't want what I want. And therefore, how can they love me? Because I want this and they don't want it. How could they love me? Okay, if you love the person and you see that you're putting a person in distress, you find out. Okay, what do you want? What do you want me to do? What do you really feel is missing? What do you really feel will make you happy about being able to serve better and being more excited about the two of us working as a team? And he says, doom, 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 boom, 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 boom. He said, all right. Okay. Let me work on these. You help me to work on them. You remind me even more when I'm not working on it the way you feel that I should. You draw my attention even more when you see that I'm slacking and lacking in one place. So where's the argument still? Why do people make themselves suffer, make so much pain, you know, in their relationships? There doesn't be so much pain. There's always going to be problems. No relationship. Sometimes relationships that seem to be the most wonderful are the most problematic. Is that people know how to deal with their problems. Okay? Sometimes people think, whew, their relationship is so wonderful. They just don't know. They get all kinds of problems. But the difference is how they deal with the problems. That's the difference. The only difference. But it all comes back again to the individual. We have to decide, am I going to make myself suffer, or am I going to make myself happy about life and make others happy about life? I have it within my own power. Everyone has it within their power. How are they going to do it? Am I going to let what somebody said or somebody did to cause me not to hear about Krishna, or to cause me to tempt my rounds of anxiety, or to cause me not to be able to share it with someone else? Or am I going to just be humble and just enjoy all of this and really see others as Prabhu and see that if somebody's in anxiety, let me see if I can help. I may not be able to, but let me see. Or let me see if maybe I may be responsible for their anxiety. But as long as you're thinking that you're right, she's thinking that she's right, and she's thinking that she has to do, that you have to do what she wants, you're thinking that she has to do what you want, there's no communication. And nobody's happy in that kind of house. Any last question?
This is about humility, Srila Krishna Prabhupada. It appears that as we enter into different spiritual paradigms, we come or we have certain kind of pious credits that gives us certain levels of humility. But as we go on in spiritual life, we realize that we have to constantly be attaining higher and higher levels of humility. So last night I had a really wonderful realization and experience about humility. I was thinking, I was cooking and it was kind of late, and I was trying to think how to get, you know, the prasadam to you, because to all the devotees, to yourself and all the devotees. And also I knew I had some other work that needed to be done before you took rest. And I was at the same time listening to the bhajan group and what was going on, and it was actually very wonderful. Mahamantra was doing an excellent job of instructing the devotees on different aspects of doing bhajans. And I was thinking, this is so wonderful. You know, mantra is, you know, so enthusiastic, so nice. But at the same time, I was experiencing some false ego. Because I was thinking, Raja Leela, you couldn't do that with the devotees. You know, you try to do this bhajan group, but you could only take it so far. And, you know, and it was kind of conflicting. My ego was saying one thing, and the others, and my soul was saying, but how wonderful, you know, what mantra's doing. So, as I was experiencing this, I was thinking, Raja Leela, you know, you have to apply the principle here of humility. So I went upstairs, brought your prasadam, did a few things that was really egotistical, and then I went upstairs and preached to my mind and my intelligence and tried to get to my soul. And I was preaching to myself saying, well, look, the principle of trying to love is to be humble and to understand humility, but I was understanding, I didn't really understand humility because my ego was getting in the way and there were so many things going on. But by preaching to myself, I was able to, or by trying to assess, you know, just the philosophy, I came downstairs and I was able to glorify Mahamantra and tell him how wonderful it was. But then the ego came in again, and I was questioning, but are you being for real? Are you being, is this sincere? Are you just saying this, you know, because you know this is the thing to say, or are you just, are you meaning it from the heart? And, you know, all these things were going on. So then last night before I went to bed, I really prayed to Krishna, Krishna, please, let me really mean it, even if I don't at this time. Please help me to really mean it. So the reason I'm sharing this is because humility is something that I find I have to constantly work on, because I'm not really humble. And in working on trying to attain this humility, I find that I constantly have to apply, you know, the philosophy and apply the principles that are given in this philosophy. So I guess it's a statement, but also my question is, how do we eventually get to the point where we're not just kind of working at it and it just becomes natural?
Well, this is a good example, because by working at it at first, it's very rough. It's like, in general, one knows we all want to see different things grow in the Institute. So your example is a good example. So you were doing the bhajan. Now someone else is doing the bhajan group. So the general thing is that we're attached to certain things. And we're attached because many things we do, and we don't really do it for Krishna or for the group or for Guru, but we do it as part of our ego. So Krishna was showing you that that service you're doing, that so much your ego was involved. So then when someone else is doing it, and then they're even having a better plan, or they're having additional things, or they're being very sensitive to certain areas, then one is thinking, but that's my work. But that's what I was doing. But that's what I should be doing. Or why didn't I think about those things? Or why didn't the person help me to think about those when I was in charge? I still could have been in charge. They could have bought all the ideas. And I still could have been in charge and been a better group. all that comes into the consciousness, you know. But then when those things come up, it gives us a chance to look and see. Are we happy in seeing that somebody is doing a nice service? Are we happy in seeing another aspect of growth is taking place? And therefore, we're really doing it for God and for conscious raising? Or how much are we really seeing proprietorship? Or how much of distinction and adoration is there as we do something? And the way it shows is when there's a change, or as we say all the time, when there's a conflict, then it shows you to what degree something is done on a level of selflessness. So when you saw that, yes, that it wasn't a level of selflessness, that was a way also Krishna showing you that the service was mixed. And that a way of showing you also the idea of proprietorship and why we have to be careful not to be the proprietor or not to do something and it's spiritual, but we're hiding behind the spiritual while so much of our own stuff is behind it and whatnot. So Krishna can give us these opportunities as a real good chance to grow. When we find that we have mixedness, then that's when we have to work on it. That's where honesty comes in. But see, what usually happens is when something like that takes place, we cut it off and we just look at it and think, just look at the person. Look at his ego. Look what he's doing. He's taking over my work. His ego. Watch, he's not going to last very long. I mean, watch, 3 or 4 months, they're going to stop doing his service. They'll see how hard it is. Just put it all on that side. Don't take anything. And then you miss your whole chance to use what Krishna is making available. Or the whole chance to grow. That's why I keep saying how we are responsible for the things that comes and the difficulties we have. And then from that, there'll be like some grudge, some underlining grudge. Took my service. Watch. One day I'm going to take his service. You know? Everybody's going to see after a few months that the way I did it was so much better. And so you make blocks. And then many things happen, and those blocks are there. You add on to those blocks. But the humility situation, it keeps that stuff from building up. And when we have a chance to really to glorify the Lord more, we'll be able to use those opportunities. So we have to be kind of doing this on a regular basis until it becomes easy. At first it doesn't become so easy because there's just too much of how we're miscuing and how much of us is involved instead of Krishna. But after a while, we do it more and more on working on these sort of things, then it becomes more natural. And when the mind throws up that stuff at first, it throws it out almost just as fast. intelligence just throws it away. Don't think that these things don't come. As long as you're in a physical body, these sort of things, mostly, will actually come to you. But it's a matter of, you know, how much you lock yourself in with them.
Mm-hmm. One last point about that, because the ego is so crazy. And I was thinking that even up to the point after I, you know, told my mantra how wonderful it was, and it really was, mantra, it really was, my ego was saying, but you're the one that gave him that service, so, you know. I was thinking, how crazy, why are you bothering me like this? Go away, get away. So it was just so intense, you know, but it was really nice purification for me.
The ego is very, very strong. It finds so many ways to hide, and to still try to, you know, you have to establish itself. Let me take one last question.
Should I tell me?
The difference is that even though we have all of this stuff in a spiritual environment, but we really are trying to work on it, and, you know, we're trying to help each other on it, and we realize that those things, you know, are to be addressed. But in most communities, people don't really try that hard to pull those things out. And then it goes on, and there's a certain level, you know, of a level of stagnation. But that's also why living in this kind of, being this sort of community is even more difficult in some ways, because there's this constant stirring up. And there's this constant stirring up, and people being used to help each other and to bring each other's stuff out. And sometimes, if we're not, again, humble and sufficiently honest, we'll want to just cover it up and not have to address, you know, such things. Okay, take the last question.
I just thinking one thing in terms of what you just shared. It's real helpful for me when the devotees like Raj and some other devotees, when they're dealing with things, like share out with the group, because it's such a nice example that, you know, what you were raising before in terms of, like, you know, wanting to be seen in a certain way. Raj is a nice example for me, you know, because she actually says things, so she raises it out, that as you're working through stuff, you can be honest, you know, and not only ask for yourself, but share, and then that helps other people. In terms of what she was just saying, I've heard that senior devotees often say that when they were, you know, coming along, lots of times when the newer devotees came, they got service to, you know, clean the bathrooms or just work in the kitchen to help kind of beat down. Yeah, so if someone sees that they have a strong tendency for proper profit adoration and distinction and being glorified, should they then, like, move away from taking services where that can be there and to help beat down the false ego, be focused more on doing those types of, like, humbling types of services to help kind of beat that out?
Krishna will do it. Guru will do it for them. You don't have it in time. In other words, in ashram living, many times when a new person comes, they are purposely, and this happens in some of the nunneries and monasteries also, they are purposely giving jobs where they wash the dishes, they sweep the floor, they do the art. This is the way to, or they have certain other kind of humbling practices, as a way to kind of free them from some of the energy of the material environment of proper distinction and adoration. Sometimes there's like a regimented, you know, process for that. And that can help someone sometimes to cleanse themselves a lot faster. But just participating in the spiritual activities, there'll be constant arrangements that will humble the person. And the Lord will intervene like that, and the spiritual master does that as a way to help the person. So that will go on. Otherwise, yeah, the question is, someone giving some very important services, and then they do not have chance to realize that in this process, there's so many subtle layers that have to be dealt with, and they can miss cleaning out some of those subtle layers. But by the process itself, the old stuff, those things will start coming out. Most people, they'll run when they start coming out. Most people will run. I think a very courageous person who will stay, because most times people always want to think for others to see them as they want to be seen. And it doesn't quite happen like that in devotion. because so many things we have put under the rug, or so many things we say and we know we don't mean, or we do, or we have different ulterior motives, or so many things we do that we don't realize how much we're doing it for ourselves. You see? It's like something like this, what she's explaining. So what's wrong? He's in charge of the Bhajan group, and is chanting the names of God. So what's wrong? It's okay, it's a spiritual service. But yeah, it's a service, but now we have to look. How much of it is service? How much are we serving our ego? How much are we serving the idea of being in charge, of being the boss, of being the coordinator? Or how much are we really seeing ourselves as a servant? So in a normal situation, there's nothing wrong. Person is following principles, and they're in charge of something, and they're doing it for God, so what's wrong with it? But in our system, in our activities, yeah, a lot is wrong with it. Let's see now. You're doing it for God, but let's see to what degree. Let's evaluate to what degree or to what amount of selflessness is there. And we want to look, and we want to, you know, to address that. And the way that we know that there's no selflessness is when such a change takes place and we are even happier than we would if we were doing it, because we're happy to see that someone is taking such an important service and happy to see the effects of that. And we feel it, and it's not the duality of thinking that, well, it's only happening because I was the one who started off, it was my idea, or I turned it over, you know, out of my mercy, I arranged to let the person, you know, do this, you see, out of my mercy. So it's okay, because my mercy is there. When those things are there, that means that's contamination. And when we see that, we work on it. And as we work on those situations, after a while, we begin to see how they come up in other environments, in other connections, and then, after a while, it's no longer there. For those of you who don't do that, then you may feel more positive about yourself, but you compact all kind of stuff. But at some level, sometime, it's going to have to be shaken. It's going to, you know, it's going to have to be dealt with. So one of you just feels, well, you know, I've turned this over. It was my idea, and I could do it better. But let somebody else have a chance, so they'll see that they can't do it better. And they'll just come to me for advice anyway. You see, so that's all contamination. And if we watch and listen to our mind, and listen to what we experience in that mental world, then we'll be able to see clear how Krishna is sending us the answers, but how we're not using those answers. See, our problem is dishonesty. We think dishonesty means that you write out a lie to somebody. That's one level of dishonesty. But dishonesty is also that you ignore or you avoid. You know, one way of telling a lie is just telling a lie, saying something that is not true. Another way of telling a lie is not addressing the truth. So, you know, we lie to ourselves constantly. We have a certain image we want to have of ourselves, a certain image we want others to have of ourselves, and we're ready to maintain that almost at any cost. It's like you put your hand in fire, and the fire is burning you. You put it in again, you put it in again, you put it in again. You want to maintain that you're not affected by the fire. You keep putting it in, you keep getting burned. So sometimes we have a certain image of what we think should happen, or how we want others to see us. We keep holding on to that, and that's what causes us to burn ourselves. Whatever is there, it can be changed. If we're not happy about what's happening, then see what things are subtly there that we've not worked on, because of those things we hope that we've already kind of tried to study those. And we can make the difference. If we don't make the difference, then that's also okay. Even if we don't make the difference, that's also okay. Then you'll learn, but you'll just learn through so much pain. Because God is fair, He's going to help you to learn. There'll just be so much pain down the road. It's confounded, child. It's a robot. You might need to like him.